Hello everyone, and welcome to This Nintendo Life, episode 257. My name is NBZ, and I'm afraid I've kind of just paralyzed Bally. You know, some people say that you can't, you know, stop people with words, but I just dropped some things on Bally and just told him about some stuff that's happening in my life.
God.
And I think I just knocked him out with disbelief. So I don't know how this episode's going to go, Bally. Can you handle going on?
You were just saying, I should maybe have told you this after we recorded the podcast. And yeah, the best part is I'm not even allowed to say what it is.
But no!
One day, MZ is going to write a book, and it's going to feature every moment that makes my mouth drop to the floor. So one day, look out for that book.
I might be able to talk about it one day.
One day.
And
one
the thought day. Of that brings me great joy, but like I don't know when or if ever that will happen. But at least Bally knows. And now you know that Bally knows, and you'll have to live with that for the rest of your life.
Yeah, now I'm going to be pursued.
Yeah, absolutely. So everyone make sure to track him down, find him in a dark alleyway. He'll be hiding there. But yes, hello, we're here on this podcast here today to talk about video games and Nintendo. And Bally, you've returned. You feel a little bit under the weather, also been on a trip to Scotland.
I'm a bit under the weather. Back from the island of Skye, over on the west coast of Scotland, and it was glorious. I had been to Skye before, apparently. My parents told me as the southern part of Skye, but yeah, I went with Caroline and Bally Jr. to like the almost the most northern tip of Skye, and it was almost like its own microclimate. We did some hiking, got Bally Jr. on the we've got a hiking backpack carrier to stick him in that he goes in, and yeah, it was lovely. So yeah, 4 nights in Skye. Would highly recommend anyone visiting Scotland. That's another one to check out.
Yeah, I know a few of our listeners have written in about, because people are asking about, hey, are there game shops in Scotland?
There are mountains.
There's lots of mountains. So as long as you're okay swapping mountains for games, then you're good.
Here's also something I did for the first time since I think I was a kid. And you can do this in loads of parts of the world, but Scotland's also one of many parts that's good for this. You go to a really remote part of the world, so in this case, the northernmost part of Skye, and you wait for a really clear night, and you stay in a pitch black room for 10 to 15 minutes, and then you go outside, and you turn as many lights off and don't look at screens or anything, and you obviously are far away from any towns or cities, we especially were, and then you look at the sky, and you can just see thousands upon hundreds of thousands of stars, rather than, say, you're in Edinburgh and you look at the sky, you can see a decent number of stars, but you know, light pollution,
very spotty, right?
Yeah, it's very spotty. Same with like every city in the UK. You look at the sky on a clear sky at night and you'll see some stars, but it's not great. You go to remote parts of the UK, like Skye, for example, and you can just see insane numbers of stars. It's wild. You ever tried it, MBZ?
The best that I had was when we were in Tanzania. I went on a school trip to Tanzania, and we were up on a high mountain up in the middle of nowhere. And I remember walking back down from this place where we were having food. It was like a hut on the top of the mountain. And like there were four guys, and the four of us just like stared up at the sky. It is the most astonishing thing I've ever seen.
Yeah,
like,
it's awesome.
When that stuff pops, it is just like nothing else. So
yeah,
maybe we should, I don't know, stop polluting the environment.
Yeah,
and,
light pollution.
Take it back.
Pretty annoying.
Yeah, it sucks.
But yeah, came back from Skye, and me and Caroline have been ill since. So yeah, I'm feeling under the weather, but got a few more days off.
Yeah, so as a result of that, we'll do a bit of a shorter show. Just focus on the perfectly timed Nintendo Direct. I mean,
perfectly
as always,
timed.
Nintendo on our side with their timing. I think I tweeted like after our show went out, I was like, we have a show coming up on Monday, so that means they'll probably announce it direct the next day. They, in fact, announced it on the Wednesday for a Thursday show.
It's the new norm now. They do the one-day turnaround. It used to be a two-day turnaround a lot more consistently, and it seems one day is the new normal.
I think so, and I think at this point, like, they're so confident, it might be a bit of an arrogance thing of like, everyone's gonna watch this regardless, like I mean, there was a state of play on the same day, and I don't think Nintendo really cared because they still own the news cycle when it comes to that stuff. I guess that's
side tangent, but it was a little bit of an underwhelming state of play as well, which will have
I mean, like, aside from that fucking Final Fantasy VII trailer, which
the segues. And,
look, if you're a fan of Final Fantasy VII and you know what's going on and you know what's going to happen in these parts, that trailer really did knock me for six. I was like very excited seeing a lot of stuff in there. So yeah, I'm sure it's gonna be great. But yeah, the Nintendo Direct happened, Bally. It's one like that I enjoyed. I had a good time watching it. But I think similar to the last Direct, and I think we're just gonna continue to see this pattern, it's an end of life Nintendo Direct, right? The Switch is getting old. We have some stuff happening. There's still a lot of games coming, but a lot of them are ports and old and remakes and stuff that's happening. But it does feel like, hey, next year, there's already rumors about, we talked about it last time, of end of next year is probably when a successor is coming. So they have to tide us over with some stuff before we get there. But, you know, I really enjoyed this one. I thought it was, for my money, a pretty solid one and had some stuff I'm super interested in. A lot of games coming to Switch that have not been on there yet, as well as some weird surprises out of nowhere. So, yeah, I came away pretty positive from this. How do you feel about this Direct, Bally?
Yeah, pretty positive. It's that, like you say, end of life. What's the best you can get from end of life? And it's weird shit and remakes and ports. And that's kind of, we've always had remakes and ports on the Switch the whole time, but it feels like we're getting, you know, slightly more come the end of the life cycle, and you're getting fewer of the big first party titles. Like, obviously there's no brand new Mario, Zelda, these, I mean, obviously mm-hmm. a new Mario coming in October, so that wasn't going to be announced in this thing, but no big announcements. We're not expecting any big announcements, and we'll likely be saving those for the Switch 2 whenever that's announced and eventually comes out next year, we think. So, yeah, considering all these things, it was actually really, really good. And it's almost designed for those, you know, hardcore Nintendo fans, which we definitely would label ourselves as, who are into far more Nintendo properties than just your Mario, Zelda, and Metroid. You know, like, we like a lot of the things that were shown in this Direct, and it's nice that, you know, those hardcore fans are getting more deep cuts now that we're at the end of the life cycle, where in the Switch's defense, it's had a lot of deep cuts throughout, but definitely the ratio of deep cuts, you could argue, is maybe a bit larger near the end of the life cycle rather than the start.
Yeah, I think so. And I think it's a good time to do it because the install base is so large that, you know, you're speaking to a really big audience with some of these games, and they might decide, you know, to take a chance on it because we're at the end of the life cycle and not much is coming out. So, you know, I'll give a weird, you know, a callback from the past a try and see what it's like. So, yeah, I think some expectations were not tempered, but set by known leaker Pyoro. I don't know how to say that character's name. I do love that leakers just choose the most niche fucking Nintendo characters and call themselves after
it. Pyoro, the thing from WarioWare. Yes. And he's got his own game.
Yes, he's the little bird, and you play the mini game in WarioWare.
I love that mini game.
You use his tongue to catch the things that fall from the sky. Yeah, so Pyoro, known leaker now, and pretty much validated as, like, he knows his shit, like, legit inside man on this point.
Until Nintendo takes him out. Which,
of course,
seems
the ninjas will find Pyoro and kill him horribly in blood, and we'll have to do an investigation. But he was tweeting stuff like, he tweeted a gif of Donkey Kong rolling, which is like, okay, it'll be something Donkey Kong related. He tweeted about a math lab function, and everyone was losing their mind because, of course, F-Zero. And so I think, like, the stuff he was saying was like, this feels like it's going to be a bit of a Bally Direct. And in a lot of ways it was. But, like, a bit of monkey paw curling, but then maybe uncurling. So I guess we'll get into that stuff. But, I mean, Bally, there's probably only one thing you want to talk about from this Direct. So should we just get into it?
Yeah, let's start with F-099. So my initial thoughts, well, I heard the rumors that F-Zero is coming, and I heard the rumors that, like, a game that was 99 was coming, and many leakers were linking the two, and I thought...
Have you tried a 99 game before, by the way? Because I think I might have downloaded, like, Tetris at one point, but I don't think I ever tried... The Mario one, I think I tried, right? Mario 99.
It was Mario 35.
35, that was it. Yes, exactly, for the anniversary.
Yeah, I never tried 35. I don't think I tried Tetris 99, or if I did, I tried it like once. I'm not the best Tetriser. And then what was the other one? Pac-Man?
Yeah, Pac-Man 99,
definitely didn't
right?
play that one. But for those who don't know me, F-Zero is my shit. Like, this is the game. This is the game that if there was 99, I would play. And so the screen starts, and it's like the Super Nintendo version. And I'm thinking, okay, is this some weird port? And then it kind of, like, becomes more clear. All right, this is 99. How do I feel about this? So initially I thought, great, Nintendo are paying attention to F-Zero. However, it's all based on the Super Nintendo version, which really doesn't handle that well. Like, I grew up playing Maximum Velocity on GBA and then GX on GameCube. So Maximum Velocity handles quite a bit better than the Super Nintendo game, but it's still fairly stiff. And then GX is just a completely different system altogether. So I was thinking Super Nintendo, not really my cup of tea. And then once it showed the mass of racers together, I thought, this just looks like a mess, and I don't want any part of this. This doesn't look like fun. And maybe the part of the trailer that kind of made me think I'm definitely going to try it was the Sky Lane, because it was just like this great mechanical solution to getting out of the mess. You collect your yellow orbs, you get out of the mess, and you overtake everyone. You bullet bill your way to
It's injecting a little bit of Mario Kart into F-Zero.
And I thought, okay, well, I'm going to give this a go. And so following the direct, I was fairly happy with the fact that F-Zero was being, given a shining light by Nintendo, but I was very sad.
They just mentioned its name, right? Even saying F-Zero is better than nothing.
They mentioned its name. It wasn't just a game in Nintendo Land. It wasn't just a trophy in Super Smash Bros. It was actually a game and an online game, and it was exciting, and that's cool.
The first F-Zero online game, right? Because, I mean, the era that this series comes from, the last time Nintendo touched it, online didn't exist, really, as a concept.
Yeah, no, exactly. And that's the famous Miyamoto quote, right? And I looked this up because I was like, when did he say it, that thing? Because he basically said, F-Zero can't come back unless we think of something new to do with it. So I was looking I was looking online. So this little website called Nintendo Life, nothing to do with us.
Yes, yeah, unaffiliated.
This article from 2012, and it was from the French site Game Cult, interviewed Miyamoto. And Game Cult said to Miyamoto, after a quick survey on Twitter, one of the games French gamers miss the most is F-Zero. Nobody really understands why Nintendo hasn't made a new one since 2004. Mm-hmm. Is there a chance we can see it back on Wii U? Because this was obviously 2012. Miyamoto said, I'm really pleased to hear Twitter's opinion, because since the first episode on SNES, many games have been made, but the series has evolved very little. I thought people had grown weary of it. I'd like to say thank you very much and try to wait by playing Nintendo Land's F-Zero minigame.
Oh, fuck off, Miyamoto!
And then he finally finished it by saying, I am also very curious, and I'd like to ask those people, why F-Zero? What do you want that we haven't done before?
Oh,
and
my God.
The answer is 2023 F-Zero 99. And this was always the thing we talked about when that quote was around at the time on the podcast. We said, yeah, just make it online. Let's try that. And so that was kind of before the whole Battle Royale thing took off. So now that we're in this era of Battle Royale and they've done F-Zero 99, I then downloaded it, played it, and in short, I love it. I love it so much, and I'll talk about exactly why I love it at the end of the show. But lukewarm on the announcement in the moment, having played about 10 hours or 8 hours or so.
Wow, okay.
Absolutely love it. Love it so much.
Yeah. So I also have played a bit of F-Zero 99, and yeah, so once we go through the direct, we're going to do a brief segment just talking through that as the only game that we've played. We've played a bunch of other stuff. We'll save that for next time. But I guess what I want to ask, Bally, is what kind of hope does this instill in you of Nintendo saying on Switch 2, okay, we're really going to do it this time. Here's a real F-Zero game that looks modern, that has incredible visuals, that also has online, but is focused more on that single player experience as well as the kind of classic F-Zero multiplayer. What are your feelings on what this does for it?
It gives me great hope, because this gives them an automatic number of how many people are willing to get online and play some F-Zero. Now, let's say that number is gargantuan, above their estimates. F-Zero 99 does really well. Then they are probably thinking, we need a new F-Zero game in the first half of the Switch 2's life cycle. Now, even if the number is par or just a bit subpar, they might still be thinking, we should make another F-Zero game, but maybe let's save it for the second half of the life cycle of Switch 2. So, like, my point is, either way, there's lots of people online right now playing F-Zero. This is a good thing. This is a good way of demonstrating to Nintendo there is some interest in this series. And it doesn't just have to be changing Mario Kart into F-Zero. What I think F-Zero does, F-Zero 99 does so well, and this was tweeted by Ash Poulsen from Good Vibes Gaming. He made the point that F-Zero 99 captures the essence of what F-Zero is meant to be about in-universe. It's meant to be a death match. It's meant to be a death race. It's meant to have high stakes. And that's exactly what F-Zero 99 does, better than any other F-Zero game.
Wow.
Now, I love GX. I love its story mode. It gets you the feel of, like, you know, the universe and all these things. But the races don't feel as lethal as 99. 99, I'm dying 50% of the time because I'm trying to push and get to the front. And that's what F-Zero 99, in my mind, has done so well. And I think that people who have gotten into F-Zero through F-Zero 99, in my mind, will struggle to go back to the other games where it's a lot less about survival and a lot more just about coming first. I think the survival element gives it this real unique style that I don't want to see F-Zero leave again. So I think the positive in my mind is that F-Zero 99 is now the blueprint for what they could do if they made it 3D. And using it with the Super Nintendo model, and I will say the controls are fantastic. They don't feel anything like the Super Nintendo. They are really modern, slick, nice feeling controls. And if they keep controls like that, go for some 3D visuals. You got the extra power of the Switch too. You can maybe do some 3D model renders instead of the sprites. They're onto a winner. I'm very impressed and hopeful, and I encourage everyone to try it at F-Zero 99 and get those numbers up, because Nintendo need to see them, and I'm very happy.
I mean, that's really great to hear. And I mean, how many races are there usually in, like, a standard F-Zero game? Because it's usually quite high, right? Like, you usually start with, like, at least 30 people on the track at once.
So I believe on the Super Nintendo it was maybe like 20 to 30.
Okay.
And then on Game Boy Advance, I think it was maybe like 30, 35. And then on those versions, each lap it eliminates. It was already kind of a bit Battle Royale-ish, where you needed to finish in the top X number, and that number would get lower and lower
right.
the more laps you completed. So this is way more than that. I think GX was maybe up at 40, 50, okay. maybe. I'm just guessing here, but like...
So they're not that... I mean, he's doubling it, yes, but like they weren't that far off like a big number of races all at once, you know?
Yes.
Obviously, this is far more chaotic and crazy, and I mean, I've had no issues with the online as well. Like, it's been pretty perfect.
Smooth, yeah.
And I don't know what kind of... I heard somewhere that they're using rollback netcode, which is insane for Nintendo, but maybe that's true.
Interesting,
But yeah, I guess, like, I wouldn't be too surprised if they're able to do 50-player online matches in a real F-Zero, right?
I should say that, like, there's a number of things it does that specifically make it more deathmatchy. So one of the crucial things it does that the Game Boy Advance and the Super Nintendo games don't do is it copies the boost system from GX. And this is the boost system where your boost is the same thing. Your boost level is the same thing as your health. So you're constantly rolling the dice every time you boost loads and getting your health low, because if your health gets low and you bump into the barrier too many times, you explode. On the Game Boy Advance games like Maximum Velocity, your boost is a completely separate meter to your health. So
I always thought that health was tied to boost.
That only came about in F-Zero X, I believe, and they copied it in GX, and now they've done it for F-Zero 99, the Super Nintendo one that didn't have it.
Weirdly enough, F-Zero X is the game in the series I've played the most, because every time I test out an N64 emulator, it's my go-to game to play. So like, I've played like the first race in F-Zero X like more than most other F-Zero games, weirdly enough. And I guess that's where my impression of how the series works comes from, basically.
The N64 and GameCube games is where they introduced that boost, and then just throwing in the added level of these are actual humans you're playing against, and that's who you're trying to avoid and, you know, race against. Like, that's the thing. It just makes people more aggressive. Plus, they've gotten the spin attack from GX. That's another thing they copied. So you can be more aggressive, and it's both an offensive and defensive maneuver. So it links both, and It's some really, really smart decisions, but yeah.
I guess we'll get more into it after totally. We've kind of done this stuff. But yeah, I think as a announcement, I think a lot of people were maybe disappointed to begin with, but it feels like there's been just a massive turnaround.
Yeah, I totally wanted a GX remake or remaster on Switch. I would have been. That's what I wanted after the Direct, but now I'm happy as Larry with 99.
Yeah, yeah. Very, very cool. So I think for me, the thing that I was super excited about was finally getting a name for the Princess Peach game. Of course, you know, we were waiting for so long to see what it was called. But ultimately, I am actually really interested in this game now. So we have Princess Peach. It's not Princess Peach's Showtime. It's Princess Peach colon Showtime. I think James Jones from RFN brought up that all three of those words are in a different font. So Nintendo just like, I don't know, they're unhinged at this point. But like the last time, it's really weird because this would have landed so much more and had even more impact had they just not talked about it at the last Direct. And I think like they wanted to do this thing. I feel like they wanted to do a triplet, right? Because they're like, okay, here's Mario RPG, but also Peach is getting a game and also Luigi. So they were like, we have to do three Mario things to like really hammer home this Mario stuff. And I mean, this Direct as well, very Mario in lots of different ways. It feels like that's the universe they're banking on for the end of life of Switch. Is like, let's just get all the Mario stuff out here. That's what people want for the end of life. But I was interested to be like, okay, well, what is this game actually, right? Because we were a little bit divided on, is it a platformer? Is it an action game? Turns out it's kind of an everything game, in the sense that it changes its genre or style of play dependent on what Peach is doing. So the idea is that you're going around these different these plays, essentially, and you're going on stage, and each one is about a different thing or has a different theming to it, and Princess Peach will adapt to whatever that is. So the first one they showed off was Sword Fighter, where it basically becomes a Bayonetta stylish action game where she's doing flips and witch time and like dashing around and slicing people with a sword. Looks pretty fun, right? Then she becomes a second one's detective, right? And so all of a sudden it's like a point and click adventure where you're walking around the environment and finding clues and stuff. And then the chef one came up, and to be frank, it just kind of looked a bit like a Mario Party mini game, so I'm not sure what's going on with the chef. And then they did a martial artist one where she's Kung Fu Peach, but it looks like a rhythm game instead. So, like, they are throwing a lot of stuff in here, and they said there's more outfits, there's more stuff. I guess my worry with this is, like, is it like butter, where it's spread too thin and none of these mechanics feel satisfying because they're trying to do too many things, as happens in Mario Party often, where those mini games often don't feel great to play because they've done 70 different mechanics? Or do they still have like a focus on like a few different things that they evolve throughout the game, and each of them is interesting and fun? I just really like it as an experimental title that is not sticking to a formula that Nintendo has done with these types of games, where I think you were pretty convinced it was just going to be a regular 2D platformer. And I'm very glad that it isn't, that it is doing something different, and it makes me want to play it, because if it was just a, you know, Super Princess Peach follow-up, then, I mean, there was a lot of issues with that anyway, but the idea that, also, it feels quite relevant with, like, the Barbie movie having come out, right? Like, Princess Peach can go and do different things. She can be anything, right? She's not just like this princess who needs saving anymore. And I think a lot of people talked about in Mario Odyssey of she has all those outfits when she goes to the different kingdoms, and like they're cool looks for Peach, and I like that they are taking that approach for this game and giving her different outfits and different looks, and you know, maybe it's building a bit of identity, just like when Luigi had Luigi's Mansion. Like, it really felt like that built that character up to have a bit more of an identity, and now going forward Peach feels like she'll like stand alone a little bit more, which is really nice.
And as much as Mario's, you know, profile has risen to perhaps a career lifetime high with the film, like Princess Peach is right up there too. Like, she's at a career high now as well with the success of the Mario movie. So like, they're definitely cashing in on a bit of their profile. And
yeah,
I thought this game had a lot of Kirby energy, and I mean that in a nice way. Like, I think, unlike Kirby, like you've described, the games look a lot more in-depth than just Kirby changing his costume and having a new ability on the existing same level. These are very distinct, different levels doing distinct, different things. And that's really exciting. I'd be fascinated to know which team is working on this game. Do we know?
Yeah, I don't know. Like, is it a internal EAD team? Like, I wouldn't be half surprised if it was like Goodfeel or somebody, but I don't think Nintendo have worked with Goodfeel in a while, you know? So I don't think it would be them. Yeah, I'm not sure. Yeah, it's a good question.
But I think it's really a nice idea and a good direction for Princess Peach to go in. Like, you're right, don't just do a 3D or 2D platformer. Like, this is its own kind of multi-genre thing that it's going for. And you make the Mario Party comparison, and I agree that, like, a lot of those games can feel a little flat, and some of them are much stronger than others. But what if these different levels had the level of depth of something like a Nintendo Land? You know, like, that's a game where there's at least five or six of those games I could play for a long time and have a really good time with. Now, it's a very different type of game, but if, like, if these levels can be really designed in a proper way from the ground up, and each mode of playing can be something successful, like, I am very excited for this game and think it could do very well.
Yeah, for sure. And I guess, like, some of the concern comes from, are they speaking to a younger audience with this game, potentially? Like, a younger female audience who is maybe underserved? And does that mean that it's going to be a little simplistic? So, like, the detective thing, how in-depth is that going to be, really? Like, will it just be kind of...
Yeah, and hopefully that's just a mode. You know, they can have an easier mode for kids, and who knows. But hopefully there's still something there for the more hardcore out there.
Yes, yeah. So yeah, I'm really excited for that one, and I'm glad that it's turned out to be something super unique. So yeah, that's great. Bally, what do you want to talk about next?
Nice that Wargroove 2 got a release date. I think it's October 6th.
5th, I believe, 5th, is the... Yeah, it's coming out very soon.
It's just looking bigger and better than the first game. They got, like, new factions, all this kind of thing. It's looking good, and yeah, really excited to play it.
Yeah, absolutely. Chucklefish doubleheader, I would say, because also, out of nowhere, Eastwood's getting DLC that Stardew Valley? What the fuck?
And it's standalone, if you want it as standalone.
So I believe you have to own Eastwood to buy it, but what they were saying is that you can start it without having finished the main game, basically. So you could...
Oh, really? Okay.
Yeah, so you still need to own Eastwood, but as long as you... you can basically just jump into it and play it standalone, which makes me wonder narratively where it stands, or if it's in some kind of, like, they just made an excuse to just have more stuff. But
what's that green town, the secondary you go to?
Oh yes, that's, yeah,
it's one got with, like a farm vibe to it. I reckon the farmy area. I would guess it's part of that.
Yeah, that could be cool. It's more almost like out of time, and the characters like out of time almost, and just in this other place. This is super exciting. I mean, like, we're big Stardew Valley fans and like that genre. And of course, Eastwood's one of our favorite games. So the idea of combining that is just fascinating and weird. But also pairing some narrative stuff with it as well. Like, it's enticing. It's really interesting. And I'm just curious to see how it plays, what it's like. I was talking to you a little bit about this when it got announced, but the idea, like, I always loved in Eastwood, like, John's pan as a symbol of, like, he uses it to defend Sam against everything, but also he uses it to cook and nurture and help. And, like, John's pan and the idea of just building a kind of home and cooking, like, ties well into the farming idea and, like, growing and nurturing as well. Like, I think it ties together thematically well from the base game as well. So I think it's a, it's a really cool thing that I didn't expect at all. Like, I thought we'd have to wait another 5 years to see something out of this team, like a follow-up to Eastwood of some kind, which I'm sure they're still working on, but yeah, it feels like they're hitting a little bit of a different market as well. Like, I don't know if this is gonna be a 50-hour like farming sim, or if it has a distinct end to it and how much farming you're actually doing.
Right.
No idea. Yeah. But I'm very, very curious about the structure of it in any case. So
yeah, I think it looks great. And Eastward is a really special game that it feels like the entire industry completely missed. And obviously we love it. And I think that, like, I want this to succeed, and I hope it does. And I think that, like, we will probably love this DLC.
Yeah, that's my thought.
It's really got the energy of getting back into that world, speaking to those characters, and now getting in an addictive loop of farming within that universe is like, it's our bread and butter.
And it's coming out this year. Like, this year is so savage, man. It just doesn't stop.
Ridiculous,
So
this direct really I was already drowning.
Bali had plans, for God's sake, and they just got stomped all over.
I had so many plans, and this director's thrown a lot of those plans in the water, and Eastwood was part of those plans that have ruined my existing plans. So I go to another water themed thing that has ruined my plans.
Oh, sure, absolutely.
Dave the Diver. I kind of do this thing where if a game comes out and it's really hyped up, but it's only on PC, I try and ignore it because I want to only get hyped about it when it might have a console release date. Yep. And it seems like Dave the Diver is getting a little bit of console exclusivity on Switch.
Yeah.
I think this game's coming out end of October on Switch, which is really cool because I think it came out, it was just earlier this year on PC, so to get in the same year on Switch is awesome. And
yeah, it's been in early access, so it was in early access since last year, and it did really well in early access. But like, part of my job is to look at numbers on Steam and see how well things do. Dave the Diver has done fucking insane numbers. Like it was doing super well. Like it had like 11,000 Steam reviews, which is probably, quick maths here, like, I don't know, 300,000 copies maybe are in that range, so that's really good. It now has like 50 something thousand reviews.
That is
like
wild.
They've sold probably 2 million copies of that game at this point.
It's done that thing that in my mind so few games do, where the circles, mainly podcasts that I follow, are very console orientated, but they were still talking about this game that was only out on PC. Mm-hmm. And I think that happens quite rarely, where a game is successful on PC, but is still talked about in console circles. And this game did that. And there's something about it where it's the loop of dive deep for the fish, come back and make sushi.
Yeah.
I'm a sucker for games like that. We just talked about the Eastward DLC.
Absolutely.
And I was a huge sucker for a game like Moonglow Bay from 2 years ago, I want to say.
Yeah.
And that game was predominantly about going out fishing, coming back and cooking up your food and selling it to customers. And there's just something about that loop that grabs me. And to do it with like sushi, one of my favorite foods, is also really exciting. So
this game also apparently is just wild in terms of its variety and the things you do.
Yeah.
Like, I've heard so many things about it. So, it's been on my radar for a very long time. But, yeah, this feels like a Bally-ass game, honestly.
Yeah. So, it's another one I really want to play this year. But, again, I think it's like a good 30-hour game or something.
Yeah.
So, I would love to play that game this year. Alongside, it kind of has, Moonglow Bay has the Dredge vibes. That's another game I wanted to get to this year that I think, that game's already on Switch, but yeah, I think it might have to be Dave the Diver instead, but another one to get on my list.
Absolutely. Well, Bally, we have another list that we have to abide by at some point, which is us playing Mario RPG, but Nintendo was not content to give us one RPG. Instead, they decided to drop the one thing that would make the internet lose its collective mind, which is the oft-praised, and it's usually held up as like this beacon in the face of Nintendo's current approach to Mario RPGs, Paper Mario: The Thousand Year Door. It feels like there's a generation of gamers, a generation of people on the internet, right? Like Arlo, like chief among them. But there's this group of people. Like, the interesting thing I find about Arlo is he is the GameCube generation manifested now, right? Like, the nostalgia is all based around Pikmin and Luigi's Mansion and Paper Mario: The Thousand Year Door. Like, all of his favorite things are the GameCube generation. And it feels like that generation is now at this point where the nostalgia is being weaponized by Nintendo.
This year has been insane for, like, naughty's announcements. Absolutely
Metroid Prime,
insane.
For God's sake, right?
Metroid Prime, Paper Mario, Pikmin 4, Advance Wars Reboot Camp. Like, there's been a ton from the 2000s.
Mm-hmm. And we definitely sit in that space, but we never played the Mario RPGs when we were young. I mean, I did technically, because I had Partners in Time on DS. That was the only Mario RPG style game that I played. But the Paper Mario games, we just never played, never got to. I remember so distinctly, like, watching video footage for Thousand Year Door and reading about it in magazines and looking at it and thinking it looked so cool, and I was really interested in playing it. But I just never got it. My parents never got it for me, so it just kind of passed me by. And to this day, I think I've watched like playthroughs of Thousand Year Door, but never all the way to the end. For some reason, I always got like halfway through a NCS playthrough or something and just never actually finished it. So there's a lot of Thousand Year Door that I don't know about, and I think it's, you know, we both played the original Paper Mario on N64 a couple years ago now for our backlog club. And like, I would love to play this. And it's great that they're doing a full remake. One of the things that, if you go back and you kind of compare the two versions, the original Thousand Year Door very much has a, like, it has the characters as paper, but a lot of the world is just like polygonal and 3D, right? They don't adhere to the thematic nature of it too well. And I think that's one of the things the modern Paper Mario games do better than the older ones, is that everything is made of cardboard or paper. Like, they take that theming to that next level, you know, as Nintendo is wont to do with a lot of their franchises, right? Like with the Kirby game on Wii U, the the follow-up to Canvas Curse, Rainbow Curse, yep.
Yeah.
Like, Paper Mario got that treatment in the era of Sticker Star and onwards, where everything is made of paper, everything looks like it belongs in that world, and they're basically applying that idea to this older game, which I think is really cool, and like brings it up to standard with like kind of visual incarnation that we currently have, while remaining and keeping the stuff that everyone loves about the Paper Mario series, which is to say, unique, weird, interesting characters that don't have to adhere to Miyamoto's strange brand bible, right? And I think that's the thing that people love about it. So, yeah, any thoughts on this coming back, Bally?
Yeah, I definitely muddled up which one it was. I definitely thought it was the Wii one when I saw it.
Interesting.
What's
okay.
The name of the Wii one?
Super Paper Mario.
Super Paper Mario.
That was the one that, I think that was the turning point of things going south for Paper Mario fan's perspective, because it was a bit more platforming focused, and it had the whole world flip mechanic where you would switch to 3D and go behind the veil and that sort of stuff.
I remember Ali T owning it, and it hung his whole Wii, and he did it twice. He did the same thing, and then the whole game hung at the same point on a second run through when the game got deleted or something wild, and he was like, well, I'm not playing this ever again.
Yeah, exactly. Like, there was a bug that, of course, back then you couldn't patch video games, so it was never fixed for him. Which is a shame, but I think he enjoyed it for what it was. But yes, this is the one that people love the most.
I mean, I've obviously only played the N64 game, and I really enjoyed that game. Actually, Paper Mario is a series that I want to play more of, and partly because I enjoyed 64 so much, I would be skeptical to try the ones after Thousand Year Door, as you say, because I like those RPG mechanics, and it's exciting this is coming back, and I think it gives a bit of life, a bit of voice to the idea that the next new Paper Mario might have more mechanics, or is that maybe being far too hopeful? Least Nintendo acknowledging them, a bit like F-Zero 99, you know, it's like Nintendo sprinkling some light on it.
Yeah, I mean, like, Nintendo putting out two, probably, like, Mario RPG and Thousand Year Door are probably the two most beloved Mario RPGs from a fan perspective, and I think they share in common is they have weird fucking characters that don't adhere to the Mario kind of like universal lore. Like, they were allowed to go wild with it. So if that's an indication that they're going to go back to allowing people to do that, I think that's great news. I don't know if it is, and if people are hyping themselves up a bit too much about that potential.
Yeah.
But yeah, could be. We'll see. Let's see. They opened with the Splatoon 3 DLC. Which I think is interesting. It seems like it's a roguelike mode for Splatoon, which, I mean, that's a great idea. It's a good thing to do. Roguelikes are super popular, and Nintendo haven't really touched that space at all. So them doing it in this weird kind of adjacent way, I think, is nice. My wonder is, like, the Splatoon 2 DLC was part of Nintendo Online Service, and they haven't really mentioned that at all for any new DLC that they've talked about recently. Like, the Xenoblade stuff, obviously, people paid for. There hasn't really been a new addition to, like, the DLC part of Switch Online. So I don't know, Bally, if you expect this to be part of that, because for me, that's probably the way I would play it if I wanted to play it, because I don't know if I would willingly just pay for this and play it of my own accord.
Yeah, and knowing that the Splatoon 2 DLC eventually ended up as part of Switch Online, there's too many games coming out for me to just say, like, right, I'm definitely going to play some Splatoon 3 DLC. I really enjoyed that 3 campaign, and we both did, and I would be up for some more Splatoon single player, but equally, there's so many games on this list that I would probably rather play. Like, I think it looked cool from what we saw.
I need to get better at just jumping into some of the Switch Online games, you know, ad hoc, and just like playing a couple of rounds of Splatoon a night or something, you know, like I need to do that a bit more, I think, because I do love multiplayer Splatoon. It's great fun.
Totally. I still owe it to myself to play more Splatoon. And
yeah.
But the sad thing is I could say that to a bunch of games.
Exactly. Yeah, yeah, that's the thing. Like, I think the only way that we get ourselves to do it is like, let's play together at some point, or let's like stream it or something, you know? Like, that's the... You always need an excuse.
Nintendo needs to stop throwing F-099 in my face.
Of course,
yeah. If
they
want me to play something else online. Like, I can't do both very easily, but yeah.
Absolutely. Cool. Is there anything else here, Bally, that stands out to you, or should we kind of just hit some of these other things?
I just wanted to shout out the Nintendo Museum in Kyoto.
Yes.
I think that was just a weird... We already knew it was coming, but now they wanted to show us some concept art, I guess.
Right.
They had very few details on what the museum would have. Mm-hmm. And again, it'll still be, we predict, probably the most top-level curated... limited amount of things possible, but still it's a progress, and I think it's nice that there might be a place where you can go there and hopefully see. They might have a room that just shows, this room is just dedicated to the history of Mario, and as time ticks on and Mario gets older and older and all these characters and all these franchises get older, in my view it's nice that like younger Nintendo fans can have somewhere as a reference point of this is how it all started and this is the journey these characters, this franchise has been on. That's what I'd hope the museum probably does, and I think that's quite realistic in the idea that it's like, I don't think that's, I'm asking too much to just have their top franchises and where those franchises have been in history and probably the company as a whole, because I think Nintendo love talking about the company's roots itself.
I mean, like all the Hanafuda card stuff, right? Totally. There's a long history that they can go into and have a whole section dedicated to.
I hope
to
it has all that sort of stuff, you know.
And it's being finished in March of next year.
Yeah, March 2024.
And if timing works out, I might be able to go to it. It depends when it opens, right? Because if it gets finished in March... Maybe they open in May, and I'm going to be in Japan probably most likely end of April, start of May. So
I think the tricky part will be getting on like a waiting list, and they'll have like these insane numbers of people for the first 2 years or something.
Yeah, that's the drawback of like going there straight away as soon as something like that's opened. But
yeah, that definitely happened with Nintendo Land in Osaka, and supposedly the numbers have just like really flattened out a lot since.
I'll look into it and see, but you know, I don't know if construction completing means it's going to turn around to open a month later. Like, I don't think that's how these timelines work. It may well open in June or July or something, in which case I'll miss it.
Maybe they have no idea what they're going to put in it yet. They've just built the building, you know?
Right.
They're not sure yet.
I'm sure they have some weird plans, but
I'd love them to have just a room that's full of old E3 plastic, like promotional models or something.
Oh my god!
You know, like,
somewhere
like that shit is so cool.
They should have the Star Fox puppets there, right?
Yes, absolutely. Like that. Yeah,
yeah, good stuff. So yeah, I think for me, one of the just like what the fuck, how is this coming back announcements of this direct was another Code Recollection. So this game, the DS game, originally came out in two different names back then. Obviously, we know about the European and American naming. It was called Trace Memory in US, but the second game on the Wii only ever came out in Europe and Japan, never came out in the US. So this collection brings together the DS game and the Wii game both in one, and also fully just in 3D and remastered. Like, the DS game is like a full visual novel, right? It's 2D art, it's across two screens. The famous Phantom Hourglass puzzle where you close the DS lid, that actually originates from this game. It's the first game that did that idea. I always heard interesting things about these games. Like, so the company who made them, Sing, they're defunct now. They shut down years and years ago. So I don't really know how this has come back, if Nintendo found the rights or got the rights back from them, or maybe had the rights in the first place. But they made Hotel Dusk as well, which is another DS era kind of visual novel. And I guess like if they're bringing this back, maybe they'll bring Hotel Dusk back as well. But a really interesting thing, Ashley has definitely shown up as like a sticker in Smash Brothers before and stuff, right? Like her, she's pretty iconic as a character. Like visually, you look at her and you're like, oh, I recognize that character. She was back in the day on DS or whatever. So I've always been very curious about this. And I love that they're bringing it back. As someone who played the Famicom Detective Club games when they brought those out, I'm super interested. I'll definitely check this out when it releases. And yeah, I wonder what I'll kind of think of it, because it was a very short game. I went back and listened to RFN episode where James Jones originally talked about it, and he said he finished it in like, you know, a day, basically played it before recording, played it after, and was done with it. So that first game must be quite short. I don't know if they'll extend it in any way or anything along those lines, but I guess putting them both together is justified for the package in that case, to make it so that it gets a bit more playtime from people. But yeah, that was a super surprising one. Like, I don't know, we're in a weird, as you said, like a weird space for Nintendo in terms of the things they're bringing back, and I did not expect this to be one of them. I was looking around the internet as well, because I always like when they do this and they bring back some niche thing, I always want to find the reaction from someone on YouTube who like is a super fan of that thing. And you can always find some. There were very few for this one, because this, I think this game is very niche and like didn't sell a lot of copies. But I found one girl who was like a super fan of Sing and like these games. And that was a great, it was great watching that, like vicariously living through that person's experience of getting this thing that they loved as a kid coming back finally. So yeah, shout out to Another Code, very very cool, that's it's coming back around. And yeah, there's some other stuff here that I think is cool. I love that Trombone Champ is making its way to Switch. Hell of a weird game that blew up just out of nowhere on Steam last year, I believe it was. They're implementing Nintendo Switch features of like the IR camera on the Joy-Con, yeah, and like the way cool. It controls, which is goofy and fits like the weirdness of this game. That's great. Also, multiplayer being added is just like pure chaos. Like, what a weird thing. I wish they were able to like add Nintendo songs to it. That would have been really nice if they'd been able to.
I wonder if
like,
they tried.
License some stuff. Yeah, I'm sure they did, but probably hit a brick wall as soon as they got to try and do that. So, because I'm sure that would have been like a Nintendo of America thing of like, let's talk to Japan and see, and Japan were like, nope, leave us alone. Yeah, it's a shame. They showed off Prince of Persia again, which is coming out soon, and I played and talked about last time, and very excited for that. And Bally, they brought back an infamous game on this podcast. One that I believe I described it as like trying to... It was something with a spoon. It was like trying to cut steak with a spoon or something. Is Mario versus Donkey Kong.
Ah, yes. Yes.
A game I think is my least favorite Nintendo game I've ever played. Like, I just... I revile this thing. I really hate it. And they're remaking the original, the GBA game. And this is the funny thing, like... Everyone loves Donkey Kong 94, the Game Boy game, and everyone's like, oh, that was the best. And I've looked into Donkey Kong 94 before, and I'm like, you people are insane. This is just Mario versus Donkey Kong before it was Mario versus Donkey Kong. How could anyone like this?
Even less refined than
even less Mario refined, probably. Yeah, so like, I just don't, I have never understood the love for that game. I just don't like, it's just the weird way in which Mario has to go into a position to do a forward flip where he's on his hands and then he does the move. Like, it feels rigid.
Okay, did you know that this game was the creation of the Mario backflip?
Oh, that's true, I guess. Yeah, because then that was used in 64. Actually, no, this was after 64.
I don't think he backflip in the same way in 64.
I guess originally it would have been DK94, which is where it came from. So probably not this game, right? Because if DK94 was the origin of this idea, that would have happened.
I don't think you can backflip in Mario 64.
Oh, I guess not. Yeah, I guess you do. You do the crouch jump though, where you crouch and then jump.
Yes.
And I think he backflips in the air when he does that. So maybe anyway, I'm not sure.
Yeah.
Anyway, don't play Mario vs. Donkey Kong.
This was back in the days when I was specifically playing all of the 3DS Ambassador program games.
Yes.
And Nintendo were failing to release games at a decent clip.
Yeah.
In the middle of the 3DS.
It was all we had, goddammit.
But it was a good opportunity to catch up on a lot of games, and this was one of them, and I had a really good time with it. I don't think it's like a special game in any way. Mm-hmm. I'm equally surprised they're remaking it. I don't think it's necessarily mechanically the incredible game that some people do describe this game as, but I still had a really good time, and it's like, it's fun that it's like a kind of puzzle platformer, and I can see what you're saying about, like, it's like a, how do I describe it, when you are used to 2D platforming with Mario, there's momentum and the speed you go into a jump affects the distance.
Yes.
Not in this game. It's like an automated distance, which feels very jarring if you're used to 2D platforming Mario. And that's where I can see where you're coming from, MBZ, with the whole steak with a spoon kind of thing. And I get that. So maybe they fix that. Maybe it's a bit more physics-based, but I highly doubt it.
It's funny because like the original Castlevania on NES is the exact same way with this jump, where it's like there's no air control. You just jump and you've committed to it. But I for some reason I just fucking love it in that game, and I just can't stand it in other stuff. I don't know, Castlevania is a weird weak point for me where I'm like, yeah, a lot of this stuff is bullshit, I fucking love it. So yeah, it's I don't know, it doesn't make logical sense, but yeah, it's cool to bring it. Also, I think it honestly, it feels like a crime, like seeing Lara Croft on a Nintendo Switch, like especially PS1 Lara Croft. The Tomb Raider 1-3 remaster, one of the weirdest remasters I've seen as well. Like the way they're remastering it is like this weird halfway house thing. It's just, I don't know, it's a bit strange.
They've remastered her to look like the artwork of the original game.
Yeah, the box
art. But not to look like post, I don't know, PS3 graphics. It's kind of like this kind of weird look. And this, I should also say, this game's also coming to like Xbox and PlayStation, I believe.
I think so, yeah.
It's not just Switch.
But I will feel illegal playing it on a Nintendo console. It just, like, growing up in that era and being like, Tomb Raider is PlayStation incarnate, seeing that on a Switch is just, it breaks my brain a little bit, you know, even to this day. So
It is wild.
Yeah, it's pretty crazy. Bally, they're making a new Contra game. Kind of. I mean, like, it's a remake of Contra 1, it seems like. I'll be honest, it looks
way
fucking
forward.
Yeah, it looks really ugly. I just don't like the way it looks. There was a really bad Contra game a couple of years ago as well that they tried, that was a 3D thing that was just terrible. At least this is based on a good game, but like, seems like it doesn't have online, which is what we would want for a Contra game. And I don't know. Like, WayForward's a great studio, and they make really good stuff. But sometimes, like, I don't know, they get a contract, and they're like, well, I guess we're just going to make this for this for Konami, I guess. And Konami probably haven't given them too much resources, and it just doesn't look great. So I'm not super into that. But I'm glad Contra's still a name that's being given some light. So maybe we'll get a really good one at some point. And yeah, that's most of it. The only other weird thing is a game called Unicorn Overlord, because of course we have to have a Japanese game with an obscene title in all of these. This is the latest from Vanillaware, who, very much on my radar, because they made 13 Sentinels Aegis Rim, one of the best games of, I think, 2021 is when it came out. Maybe it was 2020? God, it was so long ago, I can't remember now. I mean, 13 Sentinels, excellent visual novel paired with like some really good tactic stuff. Loved 13 Sentinels. It was like in my top 10 for that year. Gorgeous. Vanillaware just has a gorgeous art style. So they're seemingly making like a weird Fire Emblem thing, though. Apparently it's more Ogre Battle than it is anything else, which I haven't played an Ogre Battle, so I wouldn't know. But that's an interesting take, as a unique kind of approach. And like, their storytelling stuff was so good in 13 Sentinels that I'm like, I'm kind of interested in that for that alone. But I don't know, the combat looked very complicated and overbearing, and I'm not sure. So it may be a little bit of a barrier to entry, but hey, it's cool that Vanillaware are getting some more of their stuff out there. And yeah, and I think that it's pretty much it.
Can I run through three very quick ones?
Oh sure, go for it. Yeah,
really weird that Luigi's Mansion 2 has removed the
Dark Moon yeah,
post name. Like, I don't understand.
It was
why.
Weird because in Europe it was called Luigi's Mansion 2:Dark Moon, whereas in America it was Luigi's Mansion :Dark Moon. So in Europe it's always been Luigi's Mansion 2, but it had the subtitle. Again, going back to the era of 3DS where like name changes were still happening across territories, which they just don't do. Frankly, I'm a little annoyed they don't do it anymore because I thought it gave us a weird flavor, you know, when we just talk about pull blocks instead of push mode. No one ever fucking did that. But like, the fact that they called it pull blocks here is just, it's like, fucking why?
I know.
You know?
It's very strange.
But anyway, like, yeah, it was called Luigi's Mansion 2 in Europe, but it also had the subtitle. It's a weird thing.
I think WarioWare Move It is actually looking quite good.
Oh, and interesting. Okay.
It should have been the WarioWare that came out, was it last year or year before last year?
Yeah, I think it was a couple of years ago.
Which I didn't gel with massively. I've forgotten the name of it already.
Get it together.
And yeah, that game needs to get together. But Move It just looks like the game that should have launched with the Nintendo Switch instead of 1-2 Switch, you know? Like, I don't know. It just feels like it's got all the infrared sensor and the gyro and all these other things going for it, and I don't know why they didn't release this game sooner. It's just a bit strange to me. And then finally, Mario Kart 8 Wave 6 for the Booster Course pass. Why are they not I think they showed off one track with, like, what was it, Daisy Circuit? It's like,
I think that was the one. Yeah, like,
give us the other tracks. How are you meant to get us excited for DLC by only showing us characters and one track? Like, come on, if DK Mountain is coming, show us.
It's weird as well, because I saw a lot of excitement for characters, and it always baffles me. Always baffles me that people are excited for characters in Mario Kart. That's not what Mario Kart is about. So it just, exactly. I don't know. Exactly. It's very strange. But
so that was a bit of a strange one as well. But yeah, I just wanted to shout those out.
Yeah. I also think it's super interesting that, like, the couple of indie games, or, you know, there's a few indie games in here. A lot of them are kind of high profile ones, like Dave the Diver and stuff like that. But the couple of ones we hadn't heard of are, like, I guess if you want Nintendo to feature your indie game, you have to go and talk to Riot and get them to put a League of Legends sticker on it. So, because basically these two games, Bandletail and Song of Nunu, like, one of them is like a brothers style co-op adventure. One of them's like a cute, like, little indie pixel art, life sim game. Yeah. And, like, they just look like cool indies, but Riot has just put the League of Legends stamp on them. So now that they have a way higher profile, it's interesting what that company is doing with. And I honestly like that they're doing it, and I think Nintendo should follow in their lead and, like, just give their IP to cool little studios to make stuff. The last thing, Bally, is that I spent $34.99 on the Mio and Noah amiibo, and fuck me.
Oh,
like,
my God.
So
that's from Xenoblade Chronicles 3.
Yes, so the main character is Xenoblade 3. Okay.
You've gone so long without becoming an amiibo,
I know,
collector, and
I'm not. Look,
you're
I only
at the
have
final
three.
Furlong, and you've just fluffed it.
I have three amiibo. I have Shulk, I have Lucina, and I have Samus. And I think those represent, like, my hardcore nerd taste in Nintendo great. These are the three series where
those are good amiibos. Yeah,
yeah, the three
I've only got
series.
Mario and Toon Link to this day.
Yeah, exactly. Vanilla as always.
Vanilla and vanilla.
whereas me, I go into my niche loves, and I represent them. But, like, Xenoblade 3 made me cry, man. Like, I've got it. I just have to do it. Like, it's just, it's an obligation. Also, like, the newer amiibos look so much better than the older
ones.
Like, they've got to this point where they're, like, really good figures. And if I could, I would probably just buy the Mio one. But Noah's comes with it, and you can't buy them separately because they fucking know what we're like, us Xenoblade fans. We're going to buy it anyway, so.
What year was the very first amiibo?
Oh, that's a great question. When did Smash 4 Wii U come out? Because it has to be tied to that. Yeah, yeah.
So we're now on 9 years of amiibo.
Remember that first fucking Link amiibo with the P stand up his ass and the terrible face?
Yeah.
Like, that's what amiibo were back then, and they have come a long way since then.
Yeah, yeah. Nine years of amiibo.
Yeah.
I'm just glad I didn't go down the path of collecting them all. That's not...
That doesn't make any sense. Like, I mainly want it from, like, a personal, these are the things I'm passionate about that I want to, you know, have. And, like, at one point, you know, someday when, you know, maybe we own a house that isn't like a box, right, and is the actual house, then you'll have a place where you can put stuff up on a, you know, shelf that's nice or whatever.
Yeah.
I would like eventually to have, like, a shelf or a shrine for my Xenoblade related stuff, you know, and just have it there as, like, a this is the thing, this is the corner for that stuff, or here's another series that I love that I want to just have some stuff displayed.
Yeah.
You know? So I think that's kind of, I guess, in preparation.
In the meantime, let's own a handful of things that are kind of, we poke here and there and don't have a permanent place, but yeah.
Exactly. So they'll stick with me, my Noah and my Mio. And
what is your proudest Nintendo memorabilia that you own?
Oh man, I really like the Espeon plush that I got from Nintendo New York store.
That's a good one.
Yeah, that one is super cute. I love it a lot. One of my favorite Pokemon.
Do you know what mine is?
Is it your Dragonite?
I do love my Dragonite from Kyoto Pokemon Center. He's called Custard. I like him a lot. He's very good. My favorite was a present from my friend Michael. And he, for my birthday a few years ago, got me a Wind Waker poster from Japan that came out when Wind Waker came out in Japan in 2001. So it's in Japanese. Good. And it's got like the globe art. And when he gave it to me, I went and got it framed, and it's now on Bally Jr.'s bedroom.
That's awesome. That's so good. Yeah.
Yeah, that's my proudest like Nintendo. It's just a really great artwork, and obviously I love Wind Waker so much. It's important to me.
Of course.
That's what's going in my shrine.
Very good, very good. Well, we'll have our shrines eventually.
Eventually.
That was the Nintendo Direct. Like I said, I enjoyed it. I think there's some good stuff in there. Some fun, like surprising things, and yeah, I don't know, but what are your thoughts on like when they announce this next system? Because I feel like another Nintendo Direct like this, we're going to start getting real diminishing returns. And like, usually they do one in like February, March time. So we've got another few months to turn around like these things. And then what are they going to talk about for like the last few months of just Switch regular being out in the
room? Yeah, I mean, they have had overlap before where the new system is out, but then something comes out on the old system. Mm-hmm. It's just a bit weird when something comes out in that in between. And it might be especially weird when the Switch is so successful and the Switch 2 will have so much launch oomph behind it, I guess. I don't know how to describe that better, but it's a weird period. So I imagine they'll have their regular February, March Direct. Or they cut it and just stick to like indie directs, which I'd be perfectly happy with.
Totally.
Because we are getting to that point where I'd rather they just release these games they've talked about, but now let's pump all our marketing energy into that Switch 2 and let's move on. And it's hard being a hardcore Nintendo fan who's ready to move on when there are so many people out there who might have bought a Switch for the first time last year, and they're just like, what more can I play on my Switch? And it's hard to get out of our bubble and try and identify with what do most people in, say, the European market where we are think about a Switch 2, because I think Nintendo might have a really hard time, and they flubbed this massively with the Wii to Wii U, but convincing people why they need a new Nintendo Switch. It's obviously it's an easy sell to us. We know why we want
a Switch
2.
Yeah.
But for your average Joe Schmo on the street, they've got their Switch 1. They're enjoying Tears of the Kingdom. They don't care about frame rate or SDLSS. What's it called? Or
DLSS.
Or this, that, and the other. Or potential OLED screens and all this bollocks. They just want to know, why do they need to buy a Switch 2? And I'm interested to see how Nintendo market the Switch 2 in a way that doesn't just confuse people into thinking it's a Switch add-on or just a version of the Switch OLED. Or, you know, because they have done the Switch OLED. What was the other one? The Switch Micro?
The Light.
Light. Micro is the Game Boy.
I'd love to see a Switch Micro, like, fit in your pocket.
But how do they market that it's not just a Switch Lite or a Switch OLED? How do they market that it is Switch 2?
They put a 2 on the end of it. Sony figured this out a long time ago. Just put a fucking 2.
But because that's not the convention for Nintendo...
Of course, that's what I'm fascinated by. Exactly. Like, they're not the company to put a 2 on the end of it, right?
Yes.
Like, they will do something stupid. Like, this is the company that put a U on the end of Wii, right?
Yeah.
Like,
yeah.
They're not... And I mean, like, I say that, and they have had changes, right? Like, Furukawa was a different president to Iwata and different to Kimishima, but, like, are they just going to go the easy route? I'm not sure.
Because the only other time they've had a home console, if you define the Switch as a home console, obviously it's both, they've had this much success was the Wii, and they completely flubbed it.
They fucked it up so bad.
So let's, if you're further back, how did people handle the Switch, say, from the NES to the Super NES? Did people?
Well, it was even tougher back then, because that was the first time this concept had happened of, like, why do you need, your parents ask you, why do you need a new Nintendo? You have a Nintendo.
Exactly.
Yeah. Very difficult. Very difficult.
Try playing Link to the Past on an NES.
Exactly, mate. You couldn't do it. It was fucking garbage Zelda 1. What a trash game.
What a trash game. Just trash as the Beatles, they say.
Just like the Beatles. Like the Beatles. Absolutely. Yeah. Permanent callback. Great. Well, yeah, I'm looking forward to some stuff here for sure. And hopefully we'll get some more things. I mean, where the fuck is that Wind Waker and Twilight Princess remaster that apparently has existed for years?
You know what? That's a pretty good game to launch, say, April, May 2024.
Yeah.
4 months before Switch 2 comes out.
Well, I mean, as usual, Nintendo said before this Direct, this is for our winter lineup. And I guess the thing is, winter technically goes into February next year, right? So that does count. But, like, Princess Peach is a March game. Fucking Luigi's Mansion 2 is summer next year. Like, what? Yeah. Like,
there's a strong chance that's in the overlap, right?
Luigi's Mansion 2 HD is already done, I guarantee you. They're just holding it so they have something for, like, June or whatever. It's a holdover, for sure. So, anyway, good Nintendo Direct, good stuff, enjoyed it, had a good time. But Bally, you had an even better time, because you have been not playing anything else except for F-Zero 99. It's taken over your life. Tell me about it. How's it going?
Like I said, I was a bit skeptical going in, but like I also said before, the second that it's got a very structured, slow-paced tutorial. I love a slow-paced tutorial. This game has one. Before you get thrown into the mess of online, it'll tell you, like, this is how you accelerate. This is how you
boost. You do F-Zero 25 to begin with, then you get F-Zero 50 before you get to 99.
And then they go up to 99. And it's a nice step-by-step. And I wish more online games did stuff like that, because it is a bit daunting, no matter what type of game it is. But but like I said, growing up with Maximum Velocity, that game felt a bit stiff. But equally, Maximum Velocity feels far better than, say, the SNES game. So the thing is, 99 feels like smooth as butter compared to those two.
Feels really good. Yeah.
It feels so good. And I just kind of went on this journey of testing out. So there's only four cars. You got the Blue Falcon, Golden Fox, Wild Goose, and Fire Stingray. And I really gravitated initially towards the Blue Falcon, because that's the more vanilla.
Yeah.
That's the one that's easy to get into.
That's the one I've been using, honestly. Like, I tried a little bit of the other ones, but Falcon is what I've kind of connected with. That's what I'm kind of rolling with.
I think I've struggled the most to get a high result the most with the Blue Falcon, actually.
Oh, interesting.
And then I got really into Fire Stingray. So Fire Stingray has the highest top speed, but also has the best handling. So the advantage of Fire Stingray... So if this was a traditional F-Zero game, this is a really good distinction in why this game is so different. If this was a traditional F-Zero game, I would always be Fire Stingray, because I want to go fast, I want to go around corners fast, and I like handling, and I just weave my way through the crowd, and I win the race. It's not that simple with F-Zero 99.
No, no.
Because large parts of the race, you're in the pack. And let me tell you, the Fire Stingray gets churned up alive in the pack. I end up going backwards when I'm Fire Stingray, because Fire Stingray gets boshed a lot when...
You know what it reminds me of, Bally? It reminds me of that time we saw Green Day at Wembley. That's what F-Zero 99 feels like.
You don't want to be the Fire Stingray for Green Day at Wembley when 21st Century Breakdown reaches that.
Oh yeah, it pops off, man. It pops off.
Fire Stingray goes backwards when you meet a crowd. Now, if you are Fire Stingray and you can keep ahead of the crowd, you will be happy as Larry. But that happens so rarely that I feel like the skill level to be good with Fire Stingray is much higher than it would otherwise be.
Mm.
So I gravitated more towards Wild Goose, because Wild Goose is steady as she goes. Like, it's like lower top speed, but really heavy and strong.
Mm.
You can survive you can work your way through the pack. And it's fascinating sitting in a pack and just watching all the wild geese, I'll call them, like migrate to the front of the pack.
Where's this analogy going?
Because they're just boshing all the other cars out the way, because they're not getting buffeted at all by these other cars. And it's fascinating. So, and equally, then you've got like Golden Fox, and Golden Fox is big advantage. Now, I've actually looked up a bit of meta.
Okay, here we go.
Once you start watching reviews of F-Zero 99 on YouTube, these meta videos appear. So the current meta suggests that if you're Golden Fox, because Golden Fox has the advantage that they can boost the most, they gain the most energy from the pit lanes, and they also, by gaining the most energy from the pit lanes, it means on the laps they can boost the most. Whereas cars like Wild Goose and Fire Stingray, you can go through the entire pit lane and it'll only fill up maybe a third to two thirds of your health, it won't fill you up to the max. Whereas Golden Fox, it will always fill you up to the max no matter what, which gives you more ability to boost. So Golden Fox, you can just boost and stay ahead of the pack the entire time. And if you drive well enough, you can just win the race that way without even using the Sky Lane at all. But here's my strategy. So I'll all say,
right, here we go.
I have won a race. It took me 100 times to win a race.
God,
I had a few
damn
second places and I had loads of top tens before I got a number one. And my strategy was this. It was Wild Goose. You want to basically sit as close to the front of the pack as you possibly can with as much health as possible. And on the final lap, you want to use your Sky Lane like Bullet Bill, skip the queue boost. And you want to use that on the final lap in a way that means you will land from the Sky Lane with a few more corners to go.
Mm.
And when you have those few more corners to go, you want to have as much boost as possible to win the race. So basically what I've done is that's what I've done. I've used the boost. I've landed. I've often landed in fourth, third, second, or maybe even first place. And then it's just a race to the line. And I'm just boosting, 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 and boom. And
once you're in that position, I mean, you're very good at these games, so you probably feel quite confident, like, moving up the rankings and kind of getting into that first place.
Yeah, totally. It's tough because it depends what other cars are around you and what skills they have. And the game is very good at lobbing a ton of bumper cars in front of you. And there are these red ones that explode, and they seem to only appear on the last lap when you're at the front, and they do heller damage to your car. Which is another reason I like Wild Goose, is they can take a few hits from these red bumper cars that explode.
Okay, yes.
So
I've had the thing where I die early and then I become a car that annoys people.
You become a grey car.
I see.
Different
okay
to the red bumper cars. That's a very fun little mini game that they
yeah
introduced.
I was like super surprised when that happened. I was like, this is really neat that like they, if you fuck up super early, they're like, ah, we'll just get you in there to mess with other people, basically, which is it's fun because you have the rivals system, right, where you
right
rank up based on people who are in your same kind of level. They put you against them and you're like, if you finish the race ahead of these people, or if they fail, then you'll get ranked up depending on how many of your rivals you beat. And so it's fun to try and look for your rival if you get in that situation to fuck them up, even though you won't get past them. It's just fun to do that.
I got a special badge because you got badges for doing unique things in this
yes
game. You get also get like a little number showing how many times you've come first, which
oh, that's fun.
Is really fun. I've seen
how do you feel about that stuff? Because it's like, it's very much free to play trappings, but in a
yes
game that isn't free to play because it's just part of this Nintendo Online thing.
Yeah, I like it because I like the game. Like mm-hmm
you're invested, right? So you want like your car to look how you want it to look.
I'm invested. I've won a race. I feel very happy with myself.
Yeah, get the right color, get the right emblem on there, all
yeah
that sort of stuff.
I was going to say, I got a badge for KOing a rival. So,
oh,
like,
okay.
It was just luck. I KO like maybe, I don't know, two racers per race because mm-hmm when you're near the end and they're hitting all these red exploding bumper cars, like I said, if you just bump into them by accident, then they'll explode if they're on low health or something.
Right.
So I'm not really going out there going crazy trying to kill people. It just happens occasionally. But I like all those things, like where you can earn the badges, you got the background, you can earn all the different paint jobs on the cars. And what's really cool is when you win a race, you earn a black paint job for that car.
Oh, no way.
The only way to get the black paint job is to win a race with that car. So I've got the Wild Goose.
So you can see
job
then in the races
exactly
which people have won.
Yeah.
And oh, that's really cool. I like that a lot.
And so you get colors for doing F-099, which is like the main constant mode. And then you can earn tickets to enter the rotating mode, which rotates
yeah
between team battle, which is, it's a bit like the Mario Kart team thing. You get split into, I guess it's 50, because it's 99, it doesn't split 50-50. So I guess one
okay
team is bigger than the other.
Right.
That was half of 99,
it's
49,
like 51,
50.
Yeah.
Right.
Yeah, something like that, yeah.
So you can do that mode, or it does like a hard mode Grand Prix. So it'll do like four races of these four harder tracks, and then there's like a mini Grand Prix with three tracks, and you can like use tickets that you earn to do those. And it's nice because it's just like different modes. It adds variety. These tracks are much harder, and there's rumors that, like, I think there's been like a data leak actually, but like there's loads of tracks coming and they're going to be much harder because all the tracks so far, you got Big Blue and Mute City, and they're pretty bog standard tracks. Big Blue is my favorite. That's the only one I've won, and that's the one I do the best on.
It's the one that always gets picked anytime it comes up, which I think for me, it's like I get the voting system thing, but it's a little annoying where I'm like, I want to try Sand Ocean, but no one ever fucking votes for it.
Sand Ocean only ever beats Wind City or whatever it's called.
Deathwind 1, I believe.
Deathwind 1, there we go.
That's the one that always beats, but like if it's up against Mute City or Big Blue, it loses every time. And I think
it does, yeah.
I just wish there was a better way of choosing that stuff, because you know the Mario Kart way is nice, where like you could be any of you, right? You're everyone you choose.
I must admit, I prefer this, the direct voting. The kind of course you voting do. Course and then randomizing do. Within the vote is very like...
Yeah, it's chaotic. But that's the thing, is like I've played Sand Ocean one time, because the only time that it ever... Like, on the one time it happened, it was 51 to 50, 49 or whatever. So, like, I was the one deciding vote to get Sand Ocean or whatever, right?
Yeah.
So, I wish there was a better way to do that.
Is there an issue that you've not got enough time to practice Sand Ocean?
No, I just... Because I'm a casual F-Zero 99 player, right? So, yeah. I just want to experience all the different courses. And I just want to... When I race, I don't want to play Big Blue 7 times in a row. I'd like to vary up the courses that I'm playing just so I get a flavor for what's available. And I like the... I didn't really understand how the Grand Prix stuff worked, because my assumption was the tickets only work for this one Grand Prix event that's 5 races in a row that you do. But I guess, like, it's the second option always rotates, is what you're saying. And it's not... Like, there's not, like, one big Grand Prix thing that always gets built up to. It's sometimes it's the difficult courses, sometimes it's this team battle thing.
Yeah, there's, like, 4 things it rotates between.
Okay, yeah. Because the only one of those I've done is the harder races, which both of those courses I just died very quickly because they were really difficult courses. Yeah,
that's so tricky.
Yeah.
Yeah, I think... I would guess it's a way of just limiting the number of points the seriously hardcore can get, so they can't just sit on it all day... gaining points upon points upon points.
Yeah,
because you can gain points on that mode that go to like your weekly total that goes on this national world.
Oh, interesting. Okay.
I've not really got a ton of points on that.
Have you got many people on your friends list that you can compare to for your rankings and stuff like that?
Yeah, there's like 2 other friends on it that I saw, and
I have like 7 or 8 people. So I don't think I appeared on the board because I wasn't, you know, didn't have enough stuff or whatever, but yeah, I did. You were the top of my leaderboard, so I think that says a lot about the amount you played.
This is my chance to flex with my video game skills.
Yeah, absolutely.
It doesn't happen often.
No.
But that's a big part of why I'm enjoying this. This feels like it is designed predominantly for the F-Zero hardcore. It really is very difficult to come first. Took me 100 times and was very frustrating when I was close. And I still want to chase more wins, and like I'm enjoying getting the new paint jobs.
I mean, like now patterns. You have the goal of getting a win with every different car, right? Like,
right,
so you
exactly.
can get that paint job.
Exactly. You only get those paint jobs. And I think one thing that is important to say about this game is just how well put together it is. They've got the menus, the loading screens, like you get little tips on every single loading screen, and it's like the dude from the Super Nintendo like manual
where it's
it's all the comic book work from all the artwork surrounding the Super Nintendo game.
That's great.
Like, it's all just got that, like, it looks very 80s even though the game came out in the 90s, but like it's just got that style, and the music is fantastic, and the music's obviously still very retro, but like I said, the game controls very modern. And one thing on the controls, I should say, it's not less the controls, but supposedly this game feels slower because you can see further. So if you actually play the Super Nintendo game, because you can't see as far, because it can't render it in time, I'm guessing. The game feels much faster because you're seeing the track come at you faster.
Right.
It's because you can see further down the track. In this game, the game feels a little bit slower.
Okay.
Which I like, because I like seeing a lot of track in front of me. But
yeah, you don't want to be surprised and suddenly like not be able to corner properly because it just didn't... It's like fog, right? And it's just like, oh, it wasn't. I couldn't have reacted in time for that.
Which is isn't fun in a really fast-paced game.
It's the Sonic the Hedgehog problem, right? Like, I think I can't remember what video I watched about that stuff, but there's a whole, like, might be a Mark Brown thing where like there's a line of like the distance in front of your character, right?
Right.
And
yeah.
Sonic is usually ahead of that line. And so in those older Sonic games, you just fucking run into characters and spikes and enemies because you literally can't react to it fast enough.
Yeah. Yeah. But I just think the polish overall with the game and the modes and the way they rotate and how seamless the online is and how fast it loads in all the racers and unlocking all the skins and the patterns. You can, because you can unlock the colors, but then you can unlock the patterns and you can obviously merge the two. And it's stuff like that. It's just loads of collectibles, earning all the badges that you get for racing 100 times, getting 50 KOs, doing a lap this fast. You like, there's just these things to collect. You can show off your three favorite badges on each car you've got. And it's traditional like free-to-play stuff, like you said, but it's got an F-Zero vibe to it. It's a Nintendo vibe. Like
And also doesn't feel bad because you're not being nickel and dime for that stuff.
You're not being nickel and dime, exactly. You're earning it.
You're earning it through playing the game.
Precisely. And it's just got a real F-Zero nostalgia to it that I'm loving. Because I never really got into the Super Nintendo game. I played it for a few hours, but then I play it. I think I played it on the Wii U, and it's a good game. I like it, but like I said, I grew up with Maximum Velocity and GX, and this game still evokes all that nostalgia, and it's so nice to just kind of celebrate F-Zero in this way that is so, like I was saying before, feels so true to the lore, you know? Like, this is how it's meant to be in-universe. Mm-hmm. It's a death race, and that's what this game feels like, and it's incredible that not only is the polish there across the menus and everything, but the game itself feels so good, and that, you know, there's more content coming down the line. And I honestly couldn't be happier with this game. I started very negative, but now it's honestly a game of the year contender for
me. God,
it's that good, and I'm going to keep checking in between now and the end of the year. I think I'm less hungry than I was to get first place for the first time, a bit like any of kind course. Of battle royale game, but I'm gonna keep trying for those first places and maybe rack up a few more. But if I don't, that's fine. I've done it. Like, I did the challenging thing. And I couldn't be happier. You gonna get first place, Emmy? Is that your aim for the year?
My best so far is 16th, which I'm very proud of.
What was your strategy to get there, and did you race as Blue Falcon?
So this is the thing I was going to ask you about, because I really think the races I have done the best at were the ones where my start was good, where I got a good start from the beginning. If I get a good start from the beginning, then I can kind of stay within the top 30 range. If I'm just like messing up my boost to begin with, then I'm like, I'm just stuck at 50, and I usually get number 50 is usually what happens for me.
Okay.
So like, I think for that race, I did get into the top ones early in the race. I was like ahead in the early of the race, and that helped me stay out of the big melee in the middle. And so I just kept racing well throughout it, got a couple of like skyway boosts, and then just like was lucky at the end to get through. So I don't think I really had a strategy. I was like, I'm just trying to survive here and race well enough and not fuck up the corners, and you know, that worked out. So I think like my goal might be to get a top 10 finish would be nice, I think. Nice. So that's a good goal to shoot for. But yeah, I don't think there's any way I'm winning any of these races, especially now when people have figured out the meta, like you said, and know what they're doing. And like,
and yeah, it's strategies. Definitely gonna get harder the next few months as people drop out and more people are identifying things, and hopefully Nintendo have it within them to rebalance the game if Golden Fox suddenly just wins every single race,
right?
Because it's tough. But
do you foresee them adding like new cars and stuff like that to the game potentially?
I'm trying to remember. I believe there are. So I think every game, when I say every game, the Super Nintendo game and the Game Boy Advance game, Maximum Velocity, they start with four cars each. I believe you can unlock more cars in Super Nintendo one. I know for a fact you can unlock more cars in the Game Boy Advance game, Maximum Velocity. But I believe they will unlock more cars.
Mm-hmm.
I think it's very hard to balance.
Right.
I bet you there's some makeup to the way that the pack is formed, and having, you know, if everyone's Wild Goose, then the pack becomes very different to a whole pack of, say, Fire Stingrays. It's hard because of the way that the machines bosh each other and buffet each other out of the way. But I do think there will be more cars, and that's exciting. And that'll massively change the way the game's played and everything, because more so than any other F-Zero by a mile, there's like such a strategy to doing well in this game, and every car has a very different strategy. And it's really hard to master, because often there's times I'm like, I need a Skylane boost now. I need a Skylane boost now. And it doesn't come, and I get it at the worst time.
Mm.
And the game's very clever where you cannot boost while you have a Skylane boost. It will only give you your Skylane boost because it's the same damn button.
Same button, yeah.
So
yeah.
The game knows that there's an advantage to holding off on your Skylane boost.
Right.
So there's almost an advantage. This is something I try to do. I try to boost as much as possible just before I know my Skylane boost is about to fill up. That meter is about to fill up.
Okay.
Because I know that after that point, I'm not going to be able to boost. I'm just going to be able to Skylane boost.
Right.
So as complicated as that sounds, you can definitely come from 90th to win the race.
You think so?
Yeah, I think it is possible. I just think it requires great pilot skills, and I think you would probably be better off doing it with someone like Golden Fox or Fire Stingray. They're the two kind of high skill cars where if you're good at weaving and winding and avoiding packs, you'll do well. Whereas I'm quite good at F-Zero, and I'm still using Wild Goose, who's supposedly the noob car, you know, like, and I like Wild Goose because he gives me I can consistently get top 30 with Wild Goose almost every single time. A race has to go really pear-shaped for me to like go off with Wild Goose. And that's because he's so consistent at just staying the course. And if you get lucky, I can still get that top 10, maybe like that top 5. That's the dream. But anyway, as you can probably hear, I'm quite passionate about the meta of
F-099
and
I
the strategies.
It.
And it's a very impressive game. And yeah, everyone needs to give it a go.
Does it strike fear into your heart, Bally, the way Nintendo treat these 99 games? Because we could possibly be in a situation 1 year from now where Nintendo are like, we're retiring F-Zero 99, we're just taking it away, and you're gonna get, I don't fucking know, Zelda 99 now. You know, like, they are so, like, it fucking sucks, like, for preservation, for all that sort of stuff. They're like, yeah, we're just gonna take it away, like Mario 35, you can't play it anymore. It's just gone. Does that worry you at all?
No, because even if they keep it for 3 years, the game in a year's time is going to be so different to what it is now. And I accept that I might never win a race ever again. And that's okay. Mm. I'm happy with that. That's fine. Because I have won one. I was chuffed with myself. I know that the player pool dynamic is going to change completely. If F-Zero 99 gets retired, and then no new F-Zero game comes for another 6 years, that will be devastating.
Right. But because, like, it sounds like this is a thing that you would want to go back to if you just get the itch to do a bit of F-Zero,
totally,
you know?
Yeah. That's my hope, that they can have a full non-99 game that is more permanent, and there's a paid-for game with an online mode.
Mm-hmm.
And maybe one of those modes is F-Zero 99. How funny would that be?
Like, that'd be great, yeah.
Like, that would be my hope. And if they retire it and they release another F-Zero, I'm fine. That's okay. Because I think that that new game will have learnt things from this game. If they retire it and nothing's announced for a long time, it'll be pretty miserable. But F-Zero fans are used to misery, so it would be quite appropriate. In the meantime, next few months, I'm going to have a blast with this game. So,
yeah.
And that's fine. That's fine.
Bally, I am frankly thrilled for you, because we have lived through this podcast the last 10 years of me getting constant wins and you getting fucking nothing. You know?
It feels like such a win. Like, remembering back to getting a Game Boy Advance on launch day in, what, 2001?
Mm-hmm.
2002? 2001. I can never remember which year it was in the UK. But again, Maximum Velocity and Konami Crazy Racers on launch day. Like, this, the F-Zero has been with me for a very long time, and to get this game on Switch was pretty cool, especially as I was kind of lukewarm from the reveal, and then to play it and just think, wow, this is pretty special. Like, it's a cool feeling.
Yeah. I mean, between this and Advance Wars in the same year, like,
and Pikmin 4,
and Pikmin 4, Nintendo finally are like, this Bally guy, he's not been having some good luck recently. Let's juice that for him. So,
totally.
Yeah, it's very
good,
very
it's
happy.
Good stuff. I'm very happy, boy.
Awesome. Well, that, ladies and gentlemen, is going to do us for this this bi-week's edition of this Nintendo Life. So, let's get on out of here, plug some stuff, and go away. So, of course, we'd love to thank some folks for supporting the show. You can do so as well. If you go to patreon.com/thisnintendolife, you can go out there and give us a little bit of money and get some fun bonus episodes in return. And we'd like to thank some of our patrons, Bally.
Yes, thank you to our $10 tier patrons. They are Zach S., Thomas, Matthew, Albert, Wicked Gamer UK, Alan, and Turtle. Thank you all for your $10 tier plus support, I should also say. And thank you to all of our other patrons. It's hugely appreciated, all the support you give the show. Keeps the show on the road, keeps us picking up games, keeps us going. We are hugely grateful.
Absolutely. So yeah, we'll we're doing some more chatting about Nintendo stuff soon, so keep an eye out. You can obviously find us all over the internet. On Twitter, you can find me at LordNBZ. Where are you, Bally?
I'm on Twitter, or that new name I refuse Twitter. To use. At Ballyman91. That's BallyMan91. I even posted my successful winning run.
Yeah, if you want to go see that.
F-099, if you want to witness the greatness.
Mm-hmm. Absolutely. Go check that out. You can also follow the podcast Twitter at TNL Podcast, where you'll get updates about the show and what we are doing and all those fun little things. Obviously, you can find the show in various places. You can download us on Spotify, we're on Stitcher, we're on all these different podcasting apps where you just type in This Nintendo Life, subscribe, download us. We'll come into your feed every couple of weeks and give you some fun Nintendo chat. It's all good. So go do it. Go have a look and review us. Review us on Spotify. It's very easy to do so. Go there, hit the button that is 5 stars. That's the only one that the other buttons don't work, actually. If you do any of the other ones that are below 5 stars, it just breaks the app. So just click the 5-star button, and that's good. And yeah, you can also review us on iTunes also. So go ahead and please do that, because it's nice. And then people know the show exists. It's great. Cool. Well, I think that's going to do us. Any final thoughts, Bally? Any wisdom?
Just need games to stop being announced.
It's just fucking. It's just rude. It is rude and annoying. And here's the rudest fucking thing that happened. Okay, I was on a website and I was like, there's a sale for Yakuza Ishin on Steam. It's £35. That's quite a lot. I'll have a look and see how much the physical is. And I was like, oh shit, it's £20 on PlayStation 5. I'm just going to order that. 2 days later, Microsoft have their Tokyo Game Show presentation. Yakuza Ishin coming to Game Pass. You motherfuckers. Like, I can't believe it. I can't believe it, frankly. So, yeah. I guess I just never should buy a Yakuza game again. So, that's it. That's it. But yeah, lots of stuff fun coming up. Lots of good games to be talking about still.
So many
playing,
good games.
Sea of
Nintendo
Stars.
And Nintendo games to be talking about before the end of the year.
Yeah, we have a whole list of stuff that we're going to talk about this episode, but we'll save for next time. So we'll talk some Sea of Stars. We'll talk Paranormasite, what a wild game that is. A bunch of other stuff. So look forward to it when we return in a couple of more weeks. But until then, thank you all so much for listening. We'll be back very soon. Until then, bye-bye.